Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Cheater and the Rude on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Jeff Kreisler, author of the book Get Rich Cheating. You can check me out on Twitter at Jeff Kreisler. Lee Papa, the Rude, has taken the night off because he figures 2 weeks before the election, a week and a half before the election, would be a good time to go get that. You know, I was going to say something that I would have said, you know, when I was younger. I was going to say something like, and in the vagina reply. So, and I was like, you know what? That's suggesting the vagina is weak. And if we've learned anything, vagina is strong. I have seen birth. But even beyond that, the vagina's got to be strong to take in millennia of this treatment, of this oppression, suppression, depression, recession, of all this stuff that has all culminated in Richard Murdoch's face, which sort of looks like, nope, not going to even say that. Hey, everybody, this is Jeff Kreisler. You are listening to Cheat on the Road. Tonight I am flying solo, no Lee Papa, so do me a favor, if you're by a telephone, give a ring, 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. We can talk about whatever strikes your fancy, politics or not. I know many of us that have been following this election are getting a little tired of it. They want it to be over. Yes, it's an exciting time. It's nice that people follow the stuff and are interested in sort of the stuff that we're interested in all the time. At the same time, they're not really. They're interested in the one campaign, the one election, the one choice, choosing the one man. And there's a lot of other stuff that we should be dealing with. I don't just mean this election, although that's important. There's Senate and Congress and state houses and referendums and ballot issues. And frankly, the most important long run may be the state houses, because those are the people that make these voter suppression rules and enforce the votes and count the votes. And, you know, let's not kid ourselves. If this is close, it could be stolen. And, you know, that's all you need. It's close and stolen. And then you get entrenched power, and you get your Supreme Court, and you get your this and that, and it doesn't make the difference. It makes a difference, okay? They're not to say it. The Democratic Party needs to be a lot better, a lot more progressive. They need to do things better, stronger, less tied to corporations. But compared to the other side, come on. If you're telling me they're all the same, you're wrong. Okay, yeah, they're all the same, that they all have two legs, two arms, and between two and four nipples, but they're not all the same otherwise. There are some significant differences. One is sort of practicing the art of the lady doff protest too much, particularly as you're seeing now with this voter fraud stuff. The Republican, the right, them anarchy people. Look it up, A-L-E-C, all capital letters. They're screaming about voter fraud, voter fraud, everybody voted fraud. And we've heard about how there is no voter fraud, how you're more likely to get struck by lightning while riding a shark that has the winning lottery tickets printed on its dorsal fin than you are to get voter fraud. And see, I was in the middle of that sentence. I was impressing myself for sort of coming up with that whole thing at once. Anyway, the point is, we scream about voter fraud. And no voter fraud doesn't exist, and it's just a pretense for this voter suppression effort. Because look, Florida, 2,537 votes. And what were there? 20,000 people purged inappropriately from the rolls? 20,000 people, I'm pretty sure, is greater than 537. But they all would have voted for it, but the point is, they're trying that maneuver. And then we find out, my point, it's not just the fake fraud on the left that they're complaining about. And yeah, another, this Virginia congressman whose son said something on video. Do you know what he did? He resigned. He quit the campaign instead of hiding behind things. David Vitter, David Vitter, David Vitter. Ah, Constitution! Sticking around. Democrats quit when they're caught. It's spineless. They should play by the same rules the Republicans do, but the rules they play by are sort of ethics and propriety and the goodness of mankind. Anyway, there is a blip or two on the screen, but the flashing strobe light that will blind you from miles away is blaring out of the souls and the very essence of the Republican Party. This guy Sproul, I forget his first name, I want to say David, because I don't know, something about a rock and a giant, but that gives him too much credit. He is spearheading his efforts. He's been fired. He's been hired. He's been indicted. He's moving around all these Republican areas. Somebody out on there, his tutelage, I think it was either Virginia or Florida, was caught just throwing voter registration into the trash, presumably because they had been picked up from Democratic-leaning areas. I can't remember if Spohl was involved in Arizona, where one of the counties has now twice sent out Spanish-language mailers with the wrong location on the wrong date for the election. This is from the, you know, local county board of elections. I don't know exactly what, but it's the official local government arm, whether it's for the Secretary of State, but sent out mailers saying, go to this place, that's the wrong place, and go on this day, that's the wrong day, and you'll be fine. And this is, you know, why things matter. There's an effort I was involved in years ago in my comedy life about filling in local small offices. Stuff that's like unpaid, but local office, you know, seat number 702, the local Avaluza Menbaganen. That's how I pronounce things I don't even know. Because there are a lot of unfilled seats, and the brilliance, again, I've said it many times, the brilliance of the Republican Party, a better political party, not better ideas. Not better ideas. They're not interested in the future. They're not interested in America. They're not interested in truth. They're not interested in old people, young people, the vulnerable. They're only interested in winning. They are the Charlie Sheen of politics. But they're better. They fill these small local offices, and then they swarm up from the bottom. They swarm up, and they fill them. No matter what happens, they're going to keep swarming, keep swirling. They make the local rules, and the local rules in aggregate are what make the bigger rules, the state rules, and the states in aggregate are what make the country, and the country in aggregate is what makes the universe. And the universe is just a tiny little molecule in the fingertip of a giant being giving us just that one finger. But I digress into a different show that I'll be doing yesterday. The local elections matter. The local rules matter. There has been some exposure of them. There has been some discussion. But I don't know. Because ultimately, at this point of the election, it doesn't, you know, if there's an undecided out there, you're not going to persuade them. If someone's undecided at this point, it means they're so disengaged. Are they really going to go to the polls anyway? It's about turnout. So on the flip side, suppression. And it's something that worries me, that if it stays close, you get your 537 from 2000, but B, you know, whatever the number is, just takes one state to flip with one vote. You know, it just takes one ambitious Secretary of State wanting to be the next Catherine Harris. And trust me, there's more than one, there's 50 of them. You know, one local attorney general, one of us. This election has been something else. I want to play for you, just so if you're getting ready, I want to play for you a little clip, about a minute, of this video. It's an online ad for a Republican candidate in South Dakota. Her name is Christy. That's her name. Christy Noem. You may have heard of her. She has gotten some attention because she's attractive. Not that that doesn't mean she's not substantive. I'm not judging. But it's put out by the Republican Party of South Dakota. This ad, which is done in sort of James Bond map style, like tracking the history. And I'm going to skip from, like, early on, the first, like, I think it started in, like, 92 or so, to this little bit. And just embrace how this is a real ad put up by a real political party, one of the two political parties in this country that are, quote-unquote, legitimate. And this is what they're relying upon to get you to vote for their candidate. And Christy Noem is their candidate, and Matt Verilek is a Democratic candidate. Giselle, hit it.
Source, to become a Washington, D.C. political staffer. 2006, Matt Verilek hosts a raucous National Corn Dog Day party in his swanky D.C. neighborhood, serving more than 1,000 corn dogs, 1,200 beers, and a 150-pound ice luge for consuming shots of Jägermeister.
No!
2006, Christy Noem wins a seat in the state legislature representing northeastern South Dakota in Pierre. Sioux Falls, 2008, Matt Varelek is back corndogging again, defending his title as one of the few to achieve a triple-double for his beer and corndog consumption. As for Christy Noem in 2008, well, she was still looking out for South Dakota taxpayers and still representing her friends and neighbors in the legislature. Matt Varelek for Christy Noem. Radical ideas or South Dakota common sense? Who do you trust to represent South Dakota?
Yes, let us not trust the guy that has corn and beer. Let's not trust the guy that has parties. It's just a woman who's been on her farm serving a constituency. Now, I don't want to disparage Christy Noem. She may be a nice woman with nice ideas. I just kind of find it hilarious that the danger, the creeping, lurking, child-abducting, Minneapolis-sexing danger is that this guy at a party with 1,000 corn dogs and 12,000 beers or whatever. Oh, my, no! This is, first of all, what is it with attractive Republican congressmen and corn dogs? And I understand it's implicated that I think Michelle Bachmann is attractive. I find the inner beauty to inform the outer beauty. In this case, the inner ugliness makes her a monster. But let's accept that she's generally accepted as one of the more attractive. What is it with them and corn dogs? And two, what is wrong with eating and partying and having a triple-double for your beer and your corn dog? Is that what we stoop to? I think we should just make our elections like a week long. If you can really spend $1 billion in a week, have at it. Because it's okay. Excuse me. It's crazy, the corn dogging experience. You gotta go, it's on my Twitter and my Facebook if you want to see the video. It really just, it's like, what have we devolved into? And I can tell you from personal experience what we've devolved into, because I want to share with you a little bit of some recent work that I had. I can't give the details because I've been sworn to secrecy, but I'll give enough detail that you'll get it. As many of the listeners know, I write for Jennifer Granholm's show on Current TV. Take a listen. It's like the PLN of television. I don't know what that means, but it's got really sad and happy inside. I'm really happy to be here. People are probably listening. Don't say anything bad, Jeff. Who are you? Anyway, and I also wrote her convention speech, Governor Granholm's speech. You guys remember the Tom's got the elevator and the White Girls get the shaft. That's her little accent. By the way, earlier I wanted to do a Spanish accent when I was describing what those flyers said, but I didn't have it. That didn't happen to me. I wrote a speech, which is well received, and I've been trying to figure out how leverage have you written this speech. I'd say her speech and the Eastwood speech were the two speeches that got the most attention that weren't like the headliner speeches. You know what I mean? If you disagree with me, let me know somehow, but not right now. Or call in, tell me, no, and then hang up. That's cool, I've been there. Something I have to tell you about the first time I asked out a girl. I'll tell you right now, I called her up. I was in fifth grade, sixth grade, maybe seventh grade. Was it? I think it was, I don't know what it was. Because it wasn't, I'd already gone out with somebody. I already had been a boyfriend, girlfriend. And Bill Cosby's daughter was my first girlfriend. True story. Well, I mean, true story. I didn't really. It was seventh grade, so it was. Anyway, there's this girl, let's call her MF, because those are her initials. She developed early. I called her up. I said, hey, what's going on? How you doing? Oh, yeah, I'm looking good. I didn't say that. I think I said, all right. And we were talking for maybe a minute, and I said, you want to go out? And she said, who is this? And I said, Jeff. And she said, Jeff who? And I think that really informs sort of why I pursued comedy as a way of getting strangers to love me ever since. Now, the reason why I mentioned Megan, oops, I want to stay away from her name, this MS story, I don't remember, but it informed somehow this idea that I wanted to translate my success with this one speech into more speech writing. So if you're out there listening and you want a speech writer, I can keep it clean. And what I did, as I made that known to some people, and I got an opportunity to write a speech, another political speech, and I wrote it over last weekend, the weekend before. I might have talked about this last week on the show, so I'll keep it short. I wrote it, and as it turns out, the candidate for whom I wrote it won her campaign, and it was a speech written for, I'm going to change some figures and numbers here, but it's close enough, fourth grade student council at a private school in New York. That's right. I was hired to write for a between 8 and 12-year-old their student council campaign speech. I was paid money by someone who could not, I don't want to disparage the could or could not, but I was paid money because someone, look, I don't want to judge. I understand parents have a difficult time doing everything they want to do for their kid. I have a kid. I know that I will fail at some things. I know there'll be gaps in what I can provide him or her. I know that people with the financial resources should take care of the, take advantage of the resources available to them in this great city, and this great world. And there are resources that can help you with it. I mean, there are tutors out there. Apparently, get $100 an hour. That's absurd. I am going to start teaching people love, in the absence by showing bad love. I'll teach them good love. Come on. So let's not totally judge, but let's judge. You're hiring somebody to write your kid's campaign speech. This goes to a sense of entitlement. This goes to a sense of Romneyism. This goes to a mosquito flying around that I just killed. Disgusting. I didn't kill him, obviously. This goes to what I was discussing before, not about the girl that I asked out, but about where we are heading politically in this world. There is such a thickness. It has become entertainment. People have embraced. I mean, you go back to the old first debate, Kennedy-Nixon. It's about how you look on television. You go to what Roger Ailes has done amazingly successfully at Fox News. Again, the right, not interested in good, interested in winning. Roger Ailes is winning. They saw a market opportunity, and they focused, and they focused, and they brought entertainment values and entertainment production into a news space. You look at how beautiful the people on news are here, how ugly they are in the UK, and how the UK is much more reliable. How even our candidates nowadays, I was just talking about Kristi Noem. I mentioned that she's attractive. I feel dirty about that. And yet, I did it. The fact that I even did it shows how far I progressed, because normally I wouldn't say that. Not normally, but like, it wasn't the kind of language that would be used towards her or towards other people, their physical appearance, their ethnicity, their race, their sexuality. These things are mattering more than ideas and substance and personal integrity. I wrote a speech for a young person, and I don't mean a 20-year-old. I was ready when I heard about it. I'm like, if you're a kid, what college is he or she going to? No, it was for a child. Yeah, it's helped. It gave her or him confidence, self-belief. But say, what are we coming to? Yeah, I said, what are we coming to? More than other people. Let's change topics a little bit. Let's think about the Romneyism. That's sort of where it's coming. This little person I look for, the future Romneyist, given every opportunity. That's fantastic. I personally, Jeff Kreitzer, was given many opportunities. Lee always gives me crap for mentioning the opportunities I was given and have squandered. And I'm happy with that. There's no reason why people shouldn't give their kids every opportunity possible. But, it's like, you're born on third, and you think you invented baseball. Yeah, if you did that, I twisted it. I thought I was going to say you think you hit a triple, but no. You got to still respect the game. Just because you're given a self-playing piano, that doesn't mean you can go out and play a piano. You got to learn your scales. You got to learn the basics. You got to study the matches. You got to appreciate how people appreciate music. And that's what frustrates me about Romney. It's just like somebody... I can't put my finger on it, but he's like, we all know somebody like this. He's like the guy that Molly Ringwald dates in a John Hughes movie in the first half of it. He's just like, I don't want to say douchebag, it's not fair, but it's accurate. He's just, this entitled person. He's the guy that bullies kids and cuts their hair. He's the guy that puts on fake highway patrol or police uniforms and stops cars because he really can't get in trouble because dad's the freaking governor. You know, it's one thing to take risks in life. It's another thing to do it when you are supported by a safety net that puts Social Security to shame. I mean, the safety net that Mitt Romney has lived under all his entire life is absurd. I mean, what risk has Mitt Romney ever really taken? He borrowed a billion dollars to start up his quote-unquote small business. He borrowed money from people with connections to death squads. He borrowed money with his apology to sell some of his stock. Look, I don't begrudge the guy being rich. I begrudge the guy trying to translate his richness into relations with everybody else. It's fine. And we've always had a wealth camp. Barack Obama's a wealthy guy compared to most people. But for Mitt Romney to try to translate his experience within one step into what's good for everyone is offensive. Like, it's fine to take your experience and to try to project it and try to understand other people, but I don't think there's any attempt to understand the 47% life, the 99% life. It's strictly a top-down, insulated world. You know, it's like the guy that's always had the yes-men around him. You know, he's always had the yes-men around. Even in these losses, even in his campaign losses, I think he's always been able to say, it's not my fault. You know, it's just this other thing. He's had people, and I'm sure he's had plenty of people around him to back up his delusion. Let's call it delusion. Well, that's how the midday started to talk about Massachusetts, the state he's so proud of that he only began mentioning it 3 weeks ago. And this idea of him being a budget balancing guru. Let me tell you something about here. As a resident, former resident of Massachusetts, there's a law. You have to have a balanced budget. So it's not like he magically went into Massachusetts with a $1 trillion deficit and balanced it. No, he just obeyed the law. And the Olympics were balanced. Because he got I don't remember the exact figure, I want to say $2 billion, it seems like $200 million. He got a huge loan from the government. Exactly. And he outsourced a lot of the work to China. I'm not kidding. Look, there's little Olympic pins with his face on it. There are 5 Olympic pins with Mitt Romney's face on it from the 2000 Olympics in Salt Lake City, 2002, whatever it was. Those pins were made in China. As far as like being the businessman, I mean, we all know what Bain Capital does, but you know, one of those dirty little secrets is that when Bain Capital buys a company or any kind of company, they buy a company, like they fire a bunch of workers. Now, a lot of these workers have guaranteed pensions, right? So even if they fire them, there would still be a lot of expense. You know, they fire the workers to lower the expense because then it makes it a more valuable company. Because what is value essentially? If you think about it like a net profits term, it's what you make minus what you spend. And so if you spend less, you know, that gap is greater, even if the make stays the same or even lowers a little bit initially. That's why you fire a bunch of people and you sell it soon before the make gets too low. I'm using a lot of graphs in my brain that you probably don't see. What do you? Okay, radio station is Gary Now. Look. When they fire a bunch of people, and these people have their pensions, and are guaranteed pensions, Bain Capital doesn't cover that. They just cut them loose. Send them to the street. You know who covers that? The Pension Benefit Guarantee Corp. Now, don't be misled by the word corp, because while it is a corporation, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corp is an arm of the U.S. government. So, what Mitt Romney's company does is they buy a company. They fire a bunch of people. A, that costs them their jobs. B, then their pensions are sort of effed, right? But the government comes in and picks it up. So, for instance, GS Steel, maybe GSK Steel, I forget. When Mitt Romney took that over, fired a bunch of people, made them, you know, that was the story that built the stage to tell people they were all fired and train their trainers replacements. Maybe it wasn't the trainers replacements. Anyway, they... $44 million worth of value was provided by the U.S. government because they picked up the pensions. So right off the bat, it's a $44 million payment. So it's more than just this idea of, like, you know, the whole you didn't build that thing. It's more than just this idea of, like, the roads and the streets and the schools, and which is all very valuable. I mean, the public goods have really been underrepresented in this campaign. They've been tickled a little bit, but it's Econ 101, talking about public goods. I know Mitt Romney this hour is cutting some gay dude's hair. But it's more than that. It's genuine direct payments. There are some other things in GSK Steel. I don't remember. I'll look it up. Or you can look it up. Either way, I think it's on the Granholm show. Why is that allowed? I mean, it's allowed because we don't want to let people suffer. And when dickheads try to make people suffer, we try to stop it or at least try to ease the suffering. But one thing that makes me speechless. I think that's what's been so frustrating about this campaign. I think, like, why so many people that are covered or involved with it are just exhausted is that it's like, how could this even be a campaign? I understand people, you're entrenched in your Republican Democrat. You have your beliefs. And probably people that hate Obama, probably. There are a lot of people that hate Obama. But, like, how is this even a viable choice? I mean, how is it, like, maybe that's the idea. Like, Barry Weintraub, a very talented and funny comedian, had a routine, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something like Tsunami of Suez, something like that. It was basically like the wave of unrelenting crap that gets thrown at you by the right. This was back in, like, the Bush era when you think about, like, all the things that happened. Like, this justice who is terrible that gets opponent, these rules, firing, you know, state attorney generals because they didn't find voter fraud, even though they actually looked like the Gonzalez, the torture, the Ashford, all this stuff just keeps coming. Eventually you're like so overwhelmed by the wave of terrible things that you can't like pick out each little drop of it anymore because it just comes too much. It's a new normal. And it's almost like the same sense of what's gone on in this election. It's like, Ann Romney's terrible statements. Mitt Romney, like, where's the personal income tax go? Like, that was a huge issue, but it just got swarmed over by, like, Murdoch and Aiken and Paul Ryan. It's just, like, this relentless stream of crap, and if you call out the crap, you're called a whiny baby, but then, like, you got to keep calling out the crap. If you call out any of it, you have to call out all of it, and it's just, like, it's unrelenting, and it rolls over you, and it has this. I'm now picturing my child lifting himself from the bottom of the stairs to the top on just a stream gush of Romney-esque crap. It just comes out of him. I don't even know how he gets all that substance. It's like the oxygen. Romney, as a robot, does not breathe in oxygen and breathe out carbon dioxide. He breathes in oxygen and breathes out crap. He just, hey, Jeff. Obama called him a B yesterday. Yeah, well, maybe he's right. Just because someone else said it doesn't mean it's wrong. Yeah. Well, listen, I got 2 minutes left, so if you've been waiting to call until now, you got about 30 seconds left to call. After me is the final audition. Take a listen. The Final Audition Radio Hour. It's pretty fantastic stuff. It's a big effort with some really talented people. And we're looking to spread the word on that. And this show, you know, when Lee is here, it's a lot. I don't know. He's got longer hair than I do, and you can tell on the radio. This is going to be over soon. I do enjoy this time. I enjoy that I can have a conversation about issues that I'm always kind of thinking about, and that people at least have a working knowledge of it and are willing and able to listen. I look forward to maybe a month or so from now when we can start thinking about things that work and make a difference. Obviously, you know, who are leading this campaign. Wisconsin, I'm going to be at Ripon. I think it's pronounced Ripon or Ripon College tomorrow night, R-I-P-O-N. I can't remember where I have other shows, but check me out on the Twitter at Jeff Kreiser, JeffKreiselier. I'll even plug me at Lead Pundit, spelled and like it sounds. Giselle kicking the music. And this has been Cheetah in the Rude. Yeah, thanks so much for listening. I appreciate your time. We'll be back next Thursday, one more before the election. Good night, everybody.